The battery charge regulators are very well worthy of note. I'll just mention quickly, because the power that comes in from the solar cells, depending on which angle she's at, the solar cell it needs either raising in voltage or lowering in voltage or whatever else to be able to charge the batteries. And those batteries must stay as close to charged as they possibly can. If we lose solar cells through aging, one thing or another, the battery charge regulator will compensate for voltage variations, one thing or another, both going into the batteries and coming out from the batteries. Camera 2, bay 2, we have the Yahoo camera. This was a very interesting camera because during launch we took some pictures of the shroud that covered AO40. We took some pictures of it actually leaving so that AO40 in itself could be launched. And this was able to tell us that everything that had gone on in the launch was absolutely correct, and it was following the prescribed path. I have to hand it to Arianespace, the French launch agency, who operate out of Kourou in French Guiana. They gave us a launch. We couldn't have asked for a better one in any respect or any detail. They were absolutely perfect. As far as we know, they weren't even out an inch. So it was terrific. Also in Bay 2, you'll see the scope cameras. Now, the scope cameras were provided by Japan, and there are two scope cameras, one which looks towards Earth, one which looks out into space. The one that looks towards Earth has already been tested, is working fine, and we have taken to date 4 pictures of the Earth as seen from this satellite. We'll go hopefully later this year, probably in May, June and July, we'll be taking a whole series of pictures using the scope camera. The IHU, or internal housekeeping unit, is our computer on board. We have 2 of them. This is number 2. We have 2 of them. One which was made from well, true and trusted parts, the last ones we could find on the market. Knowing that, we also wanted to build our new design because the old components were gone, we'd never get any more. So we put 2 IHU2s in there, the old design which we knew would do the job, and the new design was going up so we can test it for future satellites. And one of the things we always try and look for every satellite we put up, is can we test things and prove them so that we can use them in future satellites as part of that satellite, knowing we're not going to have a major problem with them. We use these electronic devices wherever practical. We also use radiation hardened chips all the way through, again, so that our radiation problems are going to be minimal, if any. And in fact, we have done extremely well on this particular mission. The C-band receiver, which you see down at the right, bottom right, unfortunately that's 5 gigahertz. We think that we lost that as part of the accident that we had with propellant. The S1 band receiver and the S2 band receiver, we haven't been able to test. Why? Because our main transmitter now is an S-band transmitter, and we can't switch on both the S-band receivers and transmitters at the same time, or we're just going to go into lockup. So what we've had to do is leave the receivers alone and just work with our S2 band transmitter, which is up on the top right. The third bay, we have the U-band transmitter amplifier, and where the U-band transmitter exciter is down on the bottom left. Interesting. We have all of these devices covered with telemetry. So much telemetry, you'd ask why we need so much. But believe me, we do. The U-band transmitter, 2-meter transmitter, takes the right current, it heats, the finals heat up to the expected amount. Everything seems to work, except we can't hear anything from it. The relay that connects it to the antenna seems to be working. We don't know why the U-band transmitter, we're not hearing it. We wish we did. Every little piece, every transmitter, every receiver, every voltage on the system, we have pretty well covered from the viewpoint of telemetry. So we've got a very good idea what's going on and why it's going on or isn't going on. But the one thing we didn't ever find out is why the U-band transmitter has suddenly quit on us. The V-band, I'm referring to U-band as a 2-meter. I should, of course, refer to it as a 70-centimeter. The V-band transmitter is the 2-meter transmitter, and we still don't know why that doesn't work. The U-band failed during launch. We know that failed. We're just not getting any heat out of it at all. It just failed during launch. We don't know why. Bay 4, power switching units. The IF matrix is an interesting device. This connects whichever transmitters with whichever receivers by command from the Earth. And if any of you have looked at the telemetry, you'll notice that there is there a picture which lists down one side all the receivers and along the bottom all the transmitters, and red lines show up as to what is connected to what at any one given moment. Has anybody seen that? Yep, down on the back there, good. And the IF matrix works extremely well. Lila is an interesting device. This is the first time we've tried Lila. Lila referred to as the crocodile. If you put up a signal that is too strong into this into the receiver, Lila will detect your frequency and will cut out the transmitter, the appropriate transmitter frequency. The idea is that no one SSB station can hog the power that is meant to be going across the whole width of the bandwidth. It works extremely well. First thing that happens is you hear a police siren type of noise, which tells you on the receive frequency that the signal going in is too strong. If you take no notice of that, after about 30 seconds, you suddenly notice you've got no downlink on that frequency. And it keeps it off for a period of time before returning back to normal. Electric propulsion unit are the controls for the smaller rocketry that we had on board, which we used just to position the perigee of the unit, not the main one. The K-band transmitter, that's working. K-band transmitter and antenna, and K-band transmitter oscillator, that seems to be doing, that's the 24 gig stuff, and that seems to be working just fine. A very interesting aspect, you'll notice up on the right, top right, we have Global Positioning Satellite Experiment 1, Satellite 1 Experiment, and GPS Power Switching Unit. NASA came to us while we were building this and said, would we be interested in trying to detect the position of the satellite when it is outside of the GPS ring of satellites? And we said, sure. I mean, we like to be in good shape with NASA, because they're liable to do nice things for us, and we're very willing to carry out experiments for them. So we put in the GPS equipment, and they said, please see to this experiment very early in the life of AO40, or phase 3D as it was then, because none of this equipment is radiation hardened. And if it goes more than 3 months, we're quite confident we're going to lose the equipment and not hear anything from it. With the problems that we had with the propulsion system, it was a year before we got round to being able to test the GPS. NASA were very displeased with us. And then, back in November, we had an opportunity to test the GPS system. And much to our amazement, and NASA's as well, everything worked 100%. They were more amazed than we were. They have now determined that they can put up satellites into specific orbits and know where they are at any time within feet. Sorry, meters. They are absolutely delighted, because what this means is, particularly with regard to the satellites that go around the equator and are geosynchronous, they each at the moment have their slots. They each have to sit in their slots. They're maneuvered back and forth very carefully to maintain their position, so that your DirecTV or whatever other type of cable or TV you have, focus stays and you don't have to move your antenna. And what this now means is that they can probably get more satellites into the slot positions, provided they have a GPS on them and are telling the Earth where they are at any one time. Now you can pack them in a little tighter. Now you know, for example, also, that if you're a military man in the Pentagon and your spy satellite is over some part of the world, it takes a picture and it sees a missile or whatever on the ground, you know exactly where the satellite was when it took that picture, as well as its orientation and the other things. So, needless to say, NASA is now looking at us very smilingly and very friendly and saying, hey, you guys did a great job for us, now what can we do for you? And would you be interested in doing some more GPS experiments for us? That's ongoing, and we're discussing with NASA what we could do for them and what they could do for us again. And that looks most encouraging. Basics, the last of them, shows you the other GPS receiver. Now, it's interesting that one of the GPS receivers is, of course, outside the ring during apogee, i.e. at the far out point of the orbit. Now, when it comes back towards Earth, as it goes around the back of the Earth at any one time, at perigee, then if the antennas are generally speaking facing towards the Earth, the satellite is now inside the ring of GPS satellites. The GPS-2 receiver worked equally well. And again, they were able to determine exactly where the satellite was at any one given moment. So they're quite happy about that. The sun sensor electronic unit is there so that we know at any one time where the sun is on the horizon of the satellite. So if we know where the sun is, then we know what the attitude of the satellite is.